You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Do not give up that good fight, ladies and gentlemen. Tens of millions of us, I hope, knocking on wood here, will be taking to the streets to give America a big, great, big, huge hug of love tomorrow as true patriots, folks that believe in democracy. I will be there speaking at Milwaukee's No Kings rally tomorrow at Cathedral Square. I will be defending the rule of law, not just for Democrats, not just for Republicans, but for all of us. And it is certainly a privilege to be joined this afternoon by the former Assistant Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development, the first woman of color to hold that position. She's worked in three presidential administrations. She's also a lawyer. Alejandra Castillo, welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. I really appreciate you spending time with us.
Maggie, I'm so excited. First of all, I'm honored to be on the show. I love your energy. I love your candor. And I also love how you explore these really tough issues, but that we must start to think, not only start to think about, but really think deeply about, because it does impact us economically, but it also impacts the soul of our country, our democracy.
I was just going to say, Alejandra, one of the troubling things for me is that my heart hurts every day, and it breaks for not just Democrats or progressives or immigrants or undocumented people. It breaks for folks that believed that Donald Trump was going to do these things, that believe in the continuing sort of spewing of untruths about our country. You and I were speaking right before we got on air about your background and how you came into public service. And it has such resonance to the moment that we find ourselves in today as Americans of every political persuasion. I was wondering if you could just share a bit of your background and how you came to serve our country for decades.
Sure. So I am the daughter of two immigrants from the Dominican Republic who left the Dominican Republic right about 1959, 1960, fleeing a dictatorship, knowing that there was something better for them and that the U.S. really provided them that. My father was a small business owner in the Bronx in one of the toughest times. So it not only taught me about loving our country and our democracy and the rule of law, but also understanding how small business owners change a community. And that's where my love for both the law and economics, just like you, really flourished. And being able to serve my country, our country, at the highest level is, I always saw it as the most complete honor. And it doesn't come without sacrifice. I mean, the civil servant corps are extraordinary individuals, experts in their fields who are doing the work, not for the pay, but because they believe that our country can be better. So if I sound a bit patriotic, it's because I am. And because right now my heart hurts and I worry, right?
Yeah, I hear all of that. It's why I come from a family of public servants and veterans. And that's just been so deeply ingrained. And there's something that I say in the opener for my show is that no one is entitled to these positions. No elected official is entitled to these positions. And the most grounding value, sort of the litmus test, if you will, if there ever should be one, for, and I consider this for both elected officials and public servants at the highest level, is are you showing up from a place of humility with the commitment to serve the public, no matter what people's political preferences are? And every day that I hear the president or the vice president or other leaders in his cabinet talk about targeting Democrats and civil service, talking about targeting Democrat programs, when the reality is, when we look at the ACA, for example, and you look at ACA enrollment, 45% of ACA enrollees are Republicans. 35% are Democrats, get 10% independents, and then other. But it is primarily helping folks that are Donald Trump supporters, and yet we're at this crisis point where all Democrats are trying to ask for is to restore the ACA subsidies to keep people from seeing their healthcare premiums purchased through the exchanges double, triple, and simply become unaffordable. You have incredible background and experience in dealing with these issues on a national policy scale. How critical is this moment? And besides just the brinksmanship of it and trying to use power for power's sake, which is the most despicable way that an elected official can operate, what I cannot figure out what the rationale for Republicans is to oppose these subsidies to keep healthcare affordable.
Look, I will be very honest. You know, I spent a few decades in Washington, D.C., and I recently moved to the Midwest, or what I call the heartland, because I wanted to understand what makes America tick, what is happening in our country. And it is very still very puzzling, but I will tell you that as we get closer to that November 1st date, people are beginning to understand it's not just that other person who's going to have these premiums, you know, skyrocket. It's also hitting their families. I just had a colleague today tell me that her elderly father had to pay a copayment for a Zoom medical because even that is being charged. We are going to see, unfortunately, how healthcare costs will rise in a way that we won't be able to negotiate 2 months from now. It is happening today. These premiums are going to rise. As you have noted, this ugly bill the big brutal bill was a tax break for the billionaires, not for the middle class, the consumer class. That is the portion of our population that makes this economy turn. So this is real. I think the Democrats have not only picked the moment and the issue to fight for, and it's going to be a long haul because, as you know, there's no negotiations happening. Right? The House has not been in session.
None in good
possible.
Yeah, none in good faith, certainly. When you look at the numbers here, the sheer scale of this problem and the fact that the ACA subsidy is just a tiny piece of this catastrophe that is clearly visible on the horizon, that is nearly entirely, if not wholly, to be blamed on Republicans. A healthcare crisis in this country that is, again, epic in proportions. Folks looking at premium increases of 100%+. In Wisconsin, there are 313 Wisconsinites that are obtaining insurance through the marketplaces. We have seen at least one of our major nonprofit healthcare carriers drop out of the marketplace because they didn't file rate changes for this upcoming 2026 year that were anywhere near the 30%+ rate increases we saw from a for-profit health insurance companies. And as a result of that, we're going to see even more health increases, more nonprofit carriers dropping out because their risk pools are just riskier, fewer lives insured with greater health needs, that equals more risk. And 30,000 Wisconsinites could be priced out of ACA insurance completely. Alejandra, setting aside the continued work that we need to do to fix healthcare in the United States, which is largely derived from this falsehood that healthcare should somehow be a for-profit business when we all need it. What do you think is going to come next? I mean, these numbers are shocking. What do you think the off-ramp is here? Is there going to be some deal cut? I've heard cynically from a handful of Republicans, we might extend the subsidies for a year, which they would simply do to get over the midterms and not have to answer to their constituents. What's the off-ramp here? How are we going to get through this?
Look, I really believe the off-ramp is going to rely on us as participants of this democracy, right? If you haven't called your member of Congress, you need to. We need to make sure that our voices are as loud as possible because our representatives need to hear what is happening in real time on the ground in terms of our loved ones, as well as the broader healthcare system. You know, we're talking about the cost, But if you've been tracking what's happening at HHS with regards to the CDC, right?
Yes.
This argument on vaccines, we have a looming healthcare crisis that is not just about cost. It's also about accessibility. It's also about whether or not we're even able to bring in the most cutting edge innovation. When we take into account the multitude of decisions that this administration has made and you add it up, you know, the off-ramp can only be individuals like you and I and others calling on members of Congress and demanding that both the White House and Congress begin to negotiate a real solution, not a Band-Aid.
Not a Band-Aid, a real solution. We're going to have to take care of a couple of messages in just a moment. Madam Assistant Secretary, what is your take on Speaker Johnson's brinksmanship over failing to swear in Adelita Grijalva? It seems to me there's this shadow political issue going on about trying to avoid the discharge motion to force the release of the full Epstein files. It seems like such a terrible look for the speaker, and yet he's going to the mat on this. What does he think is going to happen when she eventually gets sworn in, which will have to happen?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's painful to see what's happening to Adelita Grijalva. I worked with her father. Her father was an extraordinary statesman who cared about the environment and natural resources. So it is a ridiculous play that the speaker is doing, because eventually it must happen, right?
It must happen. That is where we're at. We're going to come back with Madam Assistant Secretary she's worked in three different presidential administrations. She is a lawyer. She is an expert on this moment that we sit in. She is also the Fall 2024 Institute of Politics Fellow at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. And Jacob, if you could just get a tiny piece of sound for us right now, as we're going into our messages and before we come back, I just wanted to make this sound resonate in everyone's ears for discussion when we come back. This is Cut 58. This is Mike Johnson on CNBC. We've got the ACA. 20 plus million Americans get their insurance from the ACA. Those premiums are going up, folks. Here's what Mike Johnson has to say about that.
Republicans have said, repeal and replace, and it's like we're in a wilderness. Republicans are in the wilderness on what to do
we're not. We're not. We've got pages and pages and pages of ideas on how to reform healthcare. You can't rip Obamacare out at the roots. It's too deeply ingrained now, and that's the problem. We're not. No one's talking about repealing and replacing Obamacare.
Oh yeah. Does that remind you of this bit of sound? The concepts of a plan over healthcare. This is Cut 60, Jacob.
Yes or no? You still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
Yes or no? You still do not have a plan.
I have concepts of a plan.
Yes or no, you still do not have a plan.
Republicans, no plan for American healthcare. We keep talking about our plan next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I am talking this afternoon with former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Economic Development, current 2024 Institute of Politics Fellow at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. She's been in public service for nearly 30 years. She served across three presidential administrations. Her name is Alejandra Castillo. She's with me this afternoon talking about this looming catastrophe in healthcare. And we listened to, just before the break, you know, Donald Trump saying during the debate, I've got concepts of a plan for the repeal of the ACA. Magic Mike, I call him, Marionette Mike Johnson, the president's puppet, saying, we got pages and pages of a plan that no one has ever seen. again, with the ACA repeal legislation having failed 60 plus times, here's the polling on this is what puzzles me as a political question, Alejandra, right? We know that people are going to see 100% plus premium increases. People are going to go without insurance. If they have a medical emergency, people may die because they won't go get the help that they need. And when we look at ACA polling, back in 2024, it had an unfavorability rating of negative 10. It was in the minus. It now stands, the ACA polls at a favorability rating of plus 30 points. Again, more enrollees in the ACA exchanges are Republicans than Democrats. Why is it? I don't even understand the political point here. I don't think Republicans are winning on this political point, and yet they seem determined to dig their heels in. The Senate votes on the CR haven't changed a bit. What do you think politically might change? Are we looking at a shutdown that ekes into November and people start getting their premium notices?
Well, let me also share with you some most recent data as well.
Please. So
polling from the Data for Progress and Groundwork Collaborative finds that 73% of American voters, including 65% of Republicans, are very or somewhat concerned about rising healthcare prices. I think Washington is not listening. I think Washington is really not paying attention to what's happening on the ground. Voters are understanding because they're getting their notices already. In Wisconsin, in the next few weeks before November or on November 1st, people will definitely be getting those notices. So I think there's definitely a disconnect as to what's happening. And the clip you showed, you presented right before the break, Speaker Johnson is very aware that you can't uproot ACA. Not because it's so liked and everything. It's because it works. People like it because it works for the first time in many decades. I've heard of folks who have gotten health care. They had never dreamt of having health care coverage, and it was thanks to ACA. So I think Washington is not listening. I think in the next few weeks, especially this weekend, as many individuals around the country go to the No Kings March. Again, we need to raise our voices so that this brinkmanship is not on the backs of Americans.
And if you don't want to take Madam Assistant Secretary's word for it, you don't want to take my word for it, Jacob, we're going to listen to Cut 58 here. Listen to a Republican, excuse me, not 58, Cut 93. This is a Republican, GOP Senator Steve Davies, on CNBC admitting that costs are going up a huge amount. A MAGA senator actually let the truth slip out. Take a listen to this.
Are you in favor of extending the COVID Obama subsidy or the subsidies for Obamacare?
I'm not. You look at this was always meant to be a temporary emergency COVID era subsidy. It's a $350 billion price tag. And it is absolutely rife with fraud, waste, and abuse. And
why?
So it is not a good idea to extend it. We don't deny the fact there are increases coming in healthcare costs and insurance premiums.
So what in the hell are you doing about it? You've worked in government for a long time. I've worked in government for a long time. I have always believed that when I serve in government, especially as a leader, I'm effectively a fiduciary of a taxpayer dollar. I was always looking for places that I could make things more efficient and effective. Throwing the baby out with the bathwater, depriving tens of millions of Americans of their right, I'm going to say human right, to access healthcare and obtain health insurance is not how you make something more efficient or effective. It's how you break the whole damn thing.
I find it also fascinating to speak about a price tag when they were, voting for the big brutal bill.
Yeah.
That was not relevant, right? You know, you're absolutely right. As public servants we are fiduciaries of the public trust, right?
Yes.
The efficiency of how we manage and run not only our bureaus, but our programs, our budget, not to mention, inspector generals that no longer are in the government, who were also those watchdogs. And we go into public service with the trust that we are here to do the public good. But I find it fascinating that tax breaks for billionaires never comes into play or is discussed. But when we have to cut, then it's cutting healthcare. The most, as you well pointed out, the most primary of rights and of our dignity. We yes. also need to take, consider the dignity of somebody who's ill. When you have an ill, somebody in your family who needs to go to a hospital, we didn't even touch on rural healthcare.
Yes.
Which in this country is, and in Wisconsin, in places all across
it is in the jeopardy.
Midwest is in jeopardy. So I am very passionate about this. I want to see the hope at the end of the road. I hope the Democrats stay strong because this is an issue that is key to every family across the country.
Because every American deserves affordable health insurance, regardless of who you voted for. We're going to leave it there. I hope, Madam Assistant Secretary, you come back soon. I'd love to talk with you again.
As long as you call me Alejandra.
Alejandra, we will have you back indeed. I give the shutdown out update and a bit of Ask Maggie coming up next, so stay tuned to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Want to give my shutdown update, and then we're going to zoom into Ask Maggie. We got a little bit of Terry Barr coming up right before the end of the show for what's good local and overlooked in Wisconsin, so do not go anywhere. Again, let's just begin the beginning. Who is responsible for this shutdown? Cut 28.
Who's going to bear the brunt of the responsibility if indeed there is a shutdown of our government?
Well, if you say who gets fired, it always has to be the top. I mean, problems start from the top, and they have to get solved from the top. And the president's the leader, and he's got to get everybody in a room, and he's got to lead. You know, the interesting thing is in 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States.
Yes,
who is the president at that time?
That is who is responsible. You know what else the president is responsible? We're just getting word that, Donald Trump has commuted the sentence of serial fraudster, grifter extraordinaire, liar amongst liars, Congressman George Santos. What? Like, in what universe is that acceptable? I cannot even make sense of this. We're also getting news this afternoon that veteran federal prosecutor Beth Ucey in the Eastern District of Virginia was fired after opposing the indictment of New York Attorney General Letitia James. This comes in the wake of the news of so many federal prosecutors resigning or being forced out or quitting. We've heard about this over and over again. And I want to just say this to everybody, and then we'll go back to the shutdown update. You want to know one of the differences that you can tell that what Donald Trump is doing is just rotten to the core? I want you to name me the federal prosecutors who quit the DOJ during Joe Biden's term. I want you to name me the federal prosecutors that were forced out of their jobs during Joe Biden's term. I want you to name me the U.S. attorney appointee / interim / acting U.S. attorneys that federal courts found were illegally serving in their positions. I want you to name me all of the grand juries that refused to indict Donald Trump, his co-conspirators, January 6th people during Joe Biden's term. I want you to name me the prosecutions related to Donald Trump's corruption and the January 6th insurrection during Joe Biden's term that resulted in not guilty verdicts. Oh, by the way, one of the only not guilty verdicts was brought by a special prosecutor to look into someone that Donald Trump had accused of being a politically motivated FBI agent. One of the acquittals was of that same special counsel and his investigation spurred on by MAGA allegations against a federal prosecutor. Those are some of the things that didn't actually result in not guilty verdicts or dropped cases. Just saying. I don't know of a single career prosecutor fired. I don't know any of them that were forced out. I didn't see any of that news. Didn't see news about a wave of resignations. I didn't see Joe Biden clearing out the inspector general's offices, firing the ethics watchdogs. Yeah, I didn't see any of that. So if you want to actually start to understand the differences, it's right there, out in plain sight. It's stunning. Stunning. Oh, one of the prosecutors that got fired, by the way, was one of the top prosecutors for the Afghanistan 2021 bombing of a U.S. base. Yeah, Trump fired one of the top prosecutors, had done most of the investigation, knew that case inside and out. I'm sure it's all making the DOJ and the FBI way less political. Give me a break. Oh, by the way, Donald Trump is also targeting his political enemies using the IRS. I'll do a little bit about that next week because he said some contrary things in the past. But let's get to the shutdown update because we are watching the slow motion implosion of Speaker Mike Johnson. I'm now calling him Magic Mike because he just makes things up like magical thinking. I'm calling him Jackhole Johnson because he is disrespectful. He is rude. He says it very calmly, like a marionette mic. Doesn't move his head. Forehead hardly moves. He looks, again, like the adult version of Ralphie from A Christmas Story. But Johnson has started to get his butt handed to him more and more frequently. And yesterday was no exception. He was on with Jake Tapper, and it did not go well. Take a listen to this.
The director of the Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vogt, is taking the shutdown opportunity to fire for good federal workers, not just a furlough, but to fire them
illegally.
Multiple Republican lawmakers tell CNN that they're only finding out about the administration decisions on layoffs and contract cancellations after they've already been made public. Congressman Mark Amadei says he found out that $202 million worth of battery recycling projects were being canceled in his Nevada district via press release. He said, quote, "The communications culture sucks." Do you think the Trump administration is giving you, the legislative branch, these details sufficiently? And if so, are you passing all this information along to your members?
Look, the Trump administration is doing the very best they can with a very difficult situation. It is the Democrats who have voted now 10 times to keep the government shut down and require all of these reductions in force and the determination about what are essential programs, policies, and personnel, and what are not. This is an unenviable situation that no one in the White House relishes. The president asked Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer himself in the Oval Office, in my presence, and with Leader Thune, to please not shut the government down. Before any of this began, we never had to go down this road. But now that the Democrats keep deciding to keep the government shut down, they are forcing the administration to triage federal spending. Why? Because they have turned off the funding streams, Jake. That is what's happened. They can make this stop immediately if they will just do the simple and right thing. Pass our simple 24-page bill that just merely says status quo, keep the lights on. Democrats refuse to do it. They are the ones that are inflicting this pain on the people.
That's not really quite accurate. I mean, Russ Vogt is taking this opportunity to fire workers because they want to reduce the size of the federal workforce. None of these people are being paid anyway. It's not as though these furloughed workers are sapping up a budget. They're not being paid. This is an opportunity by Russ Vogt to shrink government, as he has outlined in Project 2025 and other places.
No, look, this is a very important distinction. Furloughed workers do get paid on the back end. They get that pay back to them. It's reimbursed, as you know. That's how it works. That's the statute and the tradition and the practice.
Oops. Let's see. 10 days ago, here's what Mike Johnson had to say about that very same issue.
It is true that in previous shutdowns, many or most of them have been paid for the time that they were furloughed. But there is new legal analysis. I don't know the details. I just saw a headline this morning. I'm not read in on it, and I haven't spoken to the White House about it. But there are some legal analysts who are saying that that may not be appropriate or necessary in terms of the law requiring that back pay be provided. So I'm sure that'll be a there will be a lot of discussion about that.
But so there are legal analysts who think that that's... So which is it? They're getting paid or not paid? And is it just the Democratic furloughed workers that aren't getting paid? And by the way, that has nothing to do with the firings themselves, because they would get paid after the shutdown ended, which would then release the funding to pay them. Magic Mike, your magical thinking doesn't work at all. It's just nonsense. And oh, by the way, I'll just remind you what the federal court reviewing these shutdown-related RIFs said about this. The administration's actions in laying off thousands of public employees during a government shutdown and targeting those programs and employees that are perceived as favored by a particular party is the epitome of hasty, arbitrary, and capricious decision-making, meaning it's illegal. And I just don't want to miss out on this. Here's Jake Tapper again schooling Jack Hole Johnson about not seating Congresswoman-elect Alita Grijalva. Take a listen to this.
So you've said that you're not going to swear in newly elected Democratic Congresswoman Alita Grijalva until the House returns for regular session and the government reopens. And point of fact, you could, if you wanted to, swear in Grijalva tomorrow. Her election's now been certified. And you did swear in two members during pro forma sessions because their families were present. Congresswoman-elect Grijalva, her dad's not going to be able to attend the swearing in whenever it happens because he died, as you know. He was a member of Congress. She was elected to fill his seat. This move is delaying her constituents having elected representation, so denying her a moment for her to be sworn in to fill her late father's role. And look, I know you a little bit. That must bother you. Isn't it time just to swear her in already?
No.
Okay, then. I don't know how to make sense of Magic Mike with his magical thinking. Jack Hole Johnson, Marionette Mike, who clearly was picked for his sterling leadership abilities. Nope, he was picked because he is an absolute lackey. Just to prove my point a little bit, Johnson is basically, has been very unknown since he became speaker. In February, 35% of the American public, this is according to Pew Research, had never heard of him. In September, so last month, 36% had never heard of him. Fewer people actually know about Senate Majority Leader John Thune. 56% have never heard of him. By the way, those that do know of Mike Johnson, 60% of them don't like him. Why is it that the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader in the Senate both are unknown? Because they are not leaders in any way, shape, or form. All they are lackeys for Donald Trump. They have no name recognition because they don't do anything. They're just lackeys again. And I was wondering, well, we don't have time to fit that in. Listen, we're going to take care of a couple of quick messages. We're going to leave you all on a good note. Sorry about the no-ass Maggie, but we had to get through the shutdown update. We'll get your questions in next week, Friday. But coming up next, so glad to be joined by my friend and colleague, Terry Barr, for what's good, local, and overlooked in Wisconsin, so we can all head off into the weekend on a positive note. Get your No King sign ready, because it's going to be a big old American love fest of patriots tomorrow. Stay tuned. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I'm engaging some deep breathing, ladies and gentlemen. in through the nose and out through the mouth to try to relax this Friday afternoon after this hellacious week of news. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We like to end our show every Friday with what I like to call What's Good, Local, and Overlooked. Is brought to us every week by my friend and colleague at Civic Media, Terry Barr. I always look forward to hearing what you have to share with us, Terry, because we all need some good things, especially given our poor brewers. The struggle is real.
Breaking my heart. I know yours too. Hopefully tonight. Tonight they're going to do it.
Listen, they swept the Dodgers 6-0 during the regular season. I don't know why they can't put four together starting today. So let's do it.
Well, for something good, how about an old-fashioned at your favorite supper club?
Love it.
Along with those deep breathing, you'll be all fine then. It is Friday night, of course, and a lot of people are probably heading out for their fish fry at their favorite spots. Well, now two groups in the state actually teamed up to find the top supper clubs for, not fish, prime rib. It is being dubbed the Prime Rib Supper Club Trail, and it basically makes its way around Wisconsin. So you can have this map in your hands, and you can hit all these different supper clubs. So here's what Kate Lee Kessler, who is with the Wisconsin Beef Council, says about it.
We know that we have a lot to brag about in Wisconsin when it comes to our prime rib and our supper club tradition. We just saw nominations from our folks who love supper club, love enjoying that tradition with their families. And so that's how we got the 16 that are currently on our list. And we already have hundreds that are on our nomination form for next year. People have been throwing them in left and right. In the meantime, it's just been a lot of fun to see all the excitement for 2025. We have folks from out of town who ask, what is a supper club? I always just say it's the culture, right? It's when you walk in and they greet you with a friendly smile, you grab that old fashioned at the bar and you anxiously await your seat. It's people come together over great food and camaraderie.
Isn't that the truth?
It is.
16 spots all around the state to give a try. Delicious adventures ahead, Maggie. That's what I would say. So here's the Packing House in Milwaukee made the list. And it is family-owned, made from scratch food. So,
I love the Packing House.
Oh, good, good.
It is one of my Dell Bar
in Wisconsin, yes. Dells.
Ooh.
Third generation supper club. If you go northwest up to Rice Lake, Layman's has been run by the same family. And I saw some photos. It looks like it's probably still set back in the 1930s, which is so cool. And then, you know, places like the Pine Creek Pit Stop, that's in Ashland. This one is just off the ATV, UTV trails. And of course, has a soup and salad bar, all you can eat.
It's only a supper club salad bar, Terry, if the salad bar has canned beets, right?
Yes. Yes.
Cold bean salad, right? Like, yes. It has to be on there. Of course, soup is included with the salad. Like, maybe also, I would also probably put this in a requirement for a proper Wisconsin supper club salad bar. Canned peaches with cottage cheese.
That is so right on. And there's always got to be those weird little like crackers with the cheese spread. You got to have
cheese,
that too.
A little Merck's cheese, a little Pine River spreadable cheese. That stuff is delicious. Maybe also some pickled veg at your table already if you're doing true supper club style. And I just wanted to say this very briefly about the Packing House restaurant. Not only is it family-owned, I have never had a bad meal there in 15 years. Ooh. No, they are not a paid sponsor. I just love good supper clubs. They also have incredibly lovely, typically jazz music on the weekends.
Ooh, I like that.
And like, can you get a better vibe? A traditional family-owned supper club in the city of Milwaukee with great live jazz music, a perfect prime rib, great fish fry. Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing that I love about the Packing House. You see all of Milwaukee in the Packing House.
Oh, that's the best.
It is every kind of person from every kind of background. And that makes it super special because there's nothing.
Everybody, elbow to elbow. It's yeah. all good.
Bellied yeah. up at the bar. I also got to give love. One of my favorite moments and memories from law school is a bunch of us, like 10, 12 of us on Fridays, would go to the Avenue, which is on East Washington Avenue, and you'd have about a 2-hour wait for a table because we were such a big group and they didn't take reservations. So we'd slug back some old fashions and usually have some yucks. This one time in particular, we finally got seated in their big, huge, huge dining room. That's also kind of a supper club thing. You pack in at the bar and then there's this big old dining room. Anyways, we get into the dining room, Terry, and we see a table that had about 3 or 4 of our law professors at it. And we were all sauced up and we're like, what's the harm in sending them a couple of bottles? You know, because there were a bunch of us, we could split the cost.
So we sent
our professors a couple bottles of the vino at the Avenue Bar and Grill on East Washington Avenue.
Yeah.
Go Badger, go Badgers.
Well, it used to be such a great place to go see sports and everything too. But if you want to see this map and the whole list, go to Beef, B-E-E-F, Tips, .com. That's it. BeefTips.com. If you don't like the list you see there, they're taking nominations for next year.
For next year. Listen, you just said the magic words, Terry. Beef Tips. I think I know what I'm getting for dinner tonight. BeefTips.com. Check out Wisconsin's best prime rib delivering supper clubs. That's going to do it for me. Stick around, folks. To ease into the weekend even further, we got Pete Schwabba coming up next with Nightlight. Always a good listen. I will be tuning in. I hope you do too. Go Brewers. I love you, Terry. Have a great weekend. And remember, folks, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together. I'll see you at No Kings.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.